Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners. And I can still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by BetOnline.ag. NFL Week 16. Time flies when you're having fun. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one who really does the heavy lifting around these parts. It might be close to hitting a wall after having to carry my dead weight all season long. Payne Insider. What's going on, my good man?
Not too much. No Thursday night game tonight.
No, it's a little bit unusual. Like, as we get into the latter stages of the season, no Thursday night. You got injury speculation running rampant. And, of course, the big news of the morning, Josh Gordon appears to have relapsed, Payne, dealing with substance abuse stuff that has plagued his otherwise talented career in the NFL.
Sad situation there. Very sad. And just another question mark for this Patriots offense now. Someone's going to have to shoulder the load here, so it'll be interesting to see what goes on with them moving forward. Not the best offensive performance the last couple of weeks, and now losing a key cog like that. He was vital in the Miami game. Really wore out the corners, had a huge pass interference drawn late in that game. So I don't think he's been as good as you'd have hoped. But he's certainly been a key cog to that offense, especially with Edelman and Gronk looking a step slower.
It definitely gave them an element, over 700 yards receiving and 4 touchdowns. But that pales in comparison to him hoping that he can get his life back on track with some of the off-field stuff that has plagued him since he was drafted into the league coming out of Baylor. Dave Mason will join us later in the show, as he always does on Thursday, to break things down from a professional standpoint and where some of the house liabilities may exist. But Payne, before we talk about some of the big games, and I do have a nice little curveball that I'm going to throw at you shortly, what were your major takeaways Monday night? The Saints get a hard-fought road victory. Carolina, of course, shutting down Cam Newton for the season. But did you see anything that you could use going forward from that game in Charlotte?
No.
I mean, I like it. Short, listen, and succinct. I like it quite a bit.
I mean, it played out how we thought it would. The number was just so inflated, and I think a lot of people, you know, specifically those who laid it with the Saints, would be like, oh, that last play with Tommy Lee Lewis. You know, reality is you had the pick before halftime. You had the fumble on the trick play. I mean, those were easily 6 points for the Panthers there. So, it was just way too much to lay. Spirited effort there defensively from a Carolina defense. That was the best we've seen them play all season, I thought. So that was good there. Exactly what we thought, right? We saw this Saints defense continue to trend up a little bit. Certainly Cam was beat up, but it's exactly what we thought. It's how we thought it would play out. Points were too much. The total market just hasn't caught up to the Saints' defensive improvements and, you know, what they are now offensively, specifically on the road. So I wasn't stunned by anything we saw there.
Yeah, and we will get to the Saints later, of course. A major marquee showdown against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Saints return home after a month. But Payne, before we get to football, my Alzheimer's kicked in on Monday, and I was remiss in a topic I brought up, and we were called out via social media. So while it's uncharacteristic for us to dive into a movie review, especially on a Thursday when we have games, I have to get your two-minute take on The Mule, as I know both of us went to see it last weekend.
Man, I've already given my review. I gave it out online. It's already out there publicly, 7.2. I thought it was a good movie. I thought it's worth the watch. It wasn't as good as I'd hoped, but then I kind of sat back and thought and said, hey, you know, we got a 90-year-old guy here driving a 90-year-old truck. It's probably not going to be that quickly paced. It is what it is. I thought it was good. There wasn't a lot of plot twists, but it's certainly watchable. And you got to pay respect to the old man, the living legend.
Yeah, there were some good one-liners in there, a strong supporting cast. We get cameos from Lawrence Fishburne. Bradley Cooper takes on a big role. I think, what's his name, Michael Pena? Is that who Bradley Cooper.
I always forget his name, but he's in a lot of stuff right now.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I joke with you. I said it was. I always want to call him John Leguizamo, but I feel like that sells his ability short. But I would agree. I mean, I wasn't as bullish. I don't think I'd be in the sevens. I think I'd be in the high sixes for review. Definitely not something that was rather plot intensive. Some good one-liners throughout the course of the movie. And an otherwise enjoyable watch. I know this is a big time of year for folks as they take time off with a lot of the holiday movies coming up. So if you and I have a chance to sneak off, maybe we'll even offer up another movie review at some point next week or in the next couple of weeks.
Not even in the sevens. You are officially the Russian judge.
I mean, I was going to go with a 6.8. That was where I was going to go. Watchability, yes, it passed those tests. Is it must-see run over men, women, and children to try and get there? I'm not quite sure I'm going to be that bullish on it. But
what's the best movie you've seen this year so far?
Oh, I'd have to really think about it. I'd have to go through and try and figure out you know, all the movies that I've seen. And maybe I'll
feel like there hasn't been a lot of great ones.
No, I don't feel like it's been a year that's been great. And you know what the nice part is, Payne? When you start to rant on some of these games, I'm going to pull up my movie apps that keep track of them, and I'll try and at least share what I think was one of the better ones that I've seen. Although,
there you go.
Full disclosure,
we'll be
here
with bated breath.
Full disclosure here, I've lost my movie status. I'm no longer a Diamond member at Regal Cinemas. I've been downgraded to a Ruby because I haven't gone nearly as much this season.
Not gonna say what I was going to say.
Oh, I was gonna wait. What? I was gonna wait for you to fire a jab. But I gave
you got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, you're getting massages every now and then.
Here we go.
Can't believe you let a man massage you.
I can't believe this is the kind of nonsense you're gonna try and start when it's completely fabricated and wrong.
You love going to the doctors. I mean, anytime you stub your toe, you're at the doctors.
You make it sound
oil
like
oil changes.
You make it sound
both,
like I get a colon
for your car and yourself. What, you know, monthly?
You make it sound like I get a colonoscopy once a month over here with the poking and prodding. Some of us who live an active lifestyle, we have a propensity to get ourselves injured as we get up here at advanced ages.
Active lifestyle, old hockey injuries isn't current day activity.
Yeah, says the guy who hasn't left the house for 13 days over there.
Oh, it's been like six. Went to the mailbox the other day. College basketball's here. Good God.
Does that count? Does going to the mailbox count for you as leaving the house?
No, it doesn't.
I was going to start to get really concerned.
To the movies. I'm trying to think of what night it was. Sunday night, I think I went to see The Mule.
Yeah, you went to see the movie. So that counts
then.
So
there we go.
All right. So at least one time in theory this week. But you know what we talked
about?
What
was the bad beat of the night last night, by the way? Was it...
you really want to go here right now.
Was it Duquesne? Was it EMU? Which one was it?
You really want to dredge open fresh wounds from the
double pushes?
Double pushes there if you got good numbers, and then I'll throw my Bulls first half bet into the equation as well.
Oh, that's right. Bulls plus a hook in the first half, lose by one after scoring 12 in the second quarter.
Yeah.
It's been rough sledding with that. Can I say something? And our listeners are probably going to hate me for this. And I know we got the push on Duquesne, but I see a lot of people complaining about like losing it. 5 and 5.5, and certainly it was the right side, and there was still value in that number. But the originator should be the guys pissed off about that even more, right? We're the guys who spent the time digging into that game. We're just sitting at the screen tailing steam.
I don't think that'll piss off all of our listeners now. Thanks, Payne. They'll now tune off or they'll fast forward to our best bet coming later in the show. There's no doubt about it. When a game is tied with 5 seconds to go and there's a double technical on the head coach and free throws, I'm just impressed in this day and age that a college basketball team could make 6 straight free throws.
Well, it is, but I'm also, I feel much better about myself because I don't have patience, been known to have a little bit of a temper, and that Duquesne coach really made me feel like I've grown as a man. I've reeled myself in a little bit.
You are a softer, gentler pain insider 5 years into recording this fine podcast. Hey, one last thing before we actually get into the games themselves, and we have 5 of them to break down. iTunes contest, you want to give those details for a lot of our loyal listeners that are out there?
Yeah, you'll have one more week to get those in on the 27th, which will be our Bowl podcast / NFL podcast, a combination, a merging of the two. We will announce those two winners. It'll effectively be like the Christmas contest giveaway. Go to iTunes, put in a 5-star review, leave a nice little sentence. If you do those two things, you'll automatically be entered into this contest giveaway. They'll be selected at random with an online randomizer. We'll be giving two Bet the Board swag packs away, which includes Visa gift cards, gear, pens, you name it. So we'll announce those two winners on the podcast on the 27th, which again is the combination of bowls and a few games from NFL Week 17.
Yeah, busy week ahead. As we've said, the podcast schedule gets adjusted going forward. Every Thursday we'll be with you until they hand out a Lombardi Trophy, obviously probably not during the bye week, but no more Monday podcast. We apologize to all of those folks out there who've relied on us to get through their morning commutes, either to or from the office. Saturday, Payne, we kick things off in Nashville with the Tennessee Titans, a double-digit favorite, laying 10.5 at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 37, as the resurgent Redskins come into town. And I wanted to actually start and ask you questions about Derrick Henry and what we've seen from the Titans offense. But when I was doing my reading last night and poking around, I found a quote. And I think this quote might be where I need to start regarding Josh Johnson, who threw for a grand total of 151 yards and a touchdown while adding 49 yards on the ground. A former Redskin great and Miami Hurricane player said this: "Me, honestly, I actually think Johnson played himself into a role as the quarterback for next season. It's hard to look at this roster and say Mark Sanchez or Colt McCoy should be in front of him to finish the season. Even if Colt comes back, I think Johnson gives you more of an opportunity because of scrambling ability. If you look at the passes Johnson throws, he throws a really pretty ball. He's putting a ball in position where either his receiver catches it or no one catches it." That coming from the great Clinton Portis, and I feel like it's a perfect way to us to start this handicap.
Oh, great running back. Oh, terrible freaking take. Yeah. I don't know how I missed that.
Apparently not a great assessor of quarterback talent.
Listen, like, you know, you hate to criticize a guy like Josh Johnson, right? He's continued to kind of, like, grind and never give up on his dream. And he gets his first NFL career win after 9 years, 2 months and 12 days, Todd. So, kudos to him. Let's see if he stays in the NFL. I'm not sure.
Stay in the NFL, he's going to be a starting quarterback in the nation's capital, Payne.
Listen, if we're truly assessing his performance against Jacksonville, so we can kind of properly gauge and project moving forward, he was terrible, right? I mean, there's a reason he was like in the Alliance American Football League and he signed a future contract to the Arena League next season. You look at some of those numbers against Jacksonville, and the Skins ran 25 total offensive snaps. Washington gained 1.6 yards per play, 39 total yards in the first half, Todd. And you kind of look at
that's not very good.
No, you kind of look at how Washington scored their points. And it was a drive out of the half that was aided by a defensive holding penalty on third down. There was an unnecessary roughness penalty on another third down. The game tying touchdown comes with like Josh Johnson. He throws 4 yards behind Jamison Crowder on third and 15. The ball gets like tipped into the air and Jamison Crowder comes in like diving and catching it. When I look at this game, I don't think Washington has a chance to do much here offensively. And this kind of is coming from a guy who everyone knows now at this point has consistently said Tennessee's defense is a bit overrated this season. You know, and the Titans actually finally snuck into the upper half of the NFL in overall defensive efficiency last week after kind of shutting down the Giants there without Odell Beckham Jr. in the torrential downpour. So that probably skewed it a little bit. But I think the one area where you can have some success and shorten this game and kind of muck it up if you're Washington, which is be kind of like handing the ball off and establishing the ground game. And that's the one spot where the Titans just aren't very good right now, and they're trending actually to be worse if this is believable. Since week 11, the Titans have allowed 52% of runs to great successful. That's seventh worst in the NFL. But you don't, right, in my opinion, and again, just strictly my opinion, because Washington doesn't have a competent quarterback, you'd think Vrabel's going to sell it to stop the run here. And then the other issue is, like, who's going to be running the ball? The offensive line's still beaten up. Adrian Peterson looks like he is just running on fumes right now. Peterson turns 34 in March, and I was looking at this specifically because this would have been the one angle to take, right? You get this double-digit dog with a total of 37, and if they can run the ball and shorten this game, it sounds great, right? But, like, you back out that 90-yard run against the Eagles on Monday Night Football. The last 7 games, Adrian Peterson has 93 carries for 2.6 a carry. Like, he's on fumes right now. So I don't even know if they're going to be able to run the ball. I don't see how Washington does anything here offensively.
When we look at the other side, a running back who's not running on fumes, putting together a best two-game stretch of his illustrious, and I use that term facetiously, of course, career.
Derrick Henry, a Heisman winner.
He is a former Heisman winner. He has 7 touchdowns in his last 3 games, 177-yard outburst last week in the rain against the Giants, 238 the week before against Jacksonville, matched up against Washington, who's 29th. In rush defense efficiency, they've allowed 7 straight teams to run for 100+. 6 of those 7 have gone for at least 130. I mean, Payne, do the Titans, I guess the biggest question here, and it's going to sound rather vague and obvious, do they have enough offensive firepower to trust them laying double digits?
I'm not sure. Listen, during the 3-game win streak, it hasn't looked pretty. And you look at who they've beaten up on, it's really the dregs of the NFL. And the one thing that you mentioned, Derrick Henry, it seems to just be a fundamental change with this Titans offense. They've run the ball 54% of the time in the last 3 weeks. It's like a full-blown Derrick Henry show right now. And, you know, you do some reading. Henry came out this week, talked about when things turned the corner from him, and it was a talk with the all-time leading rusher of the Titans, Eddie George. And Eddie George reached out to him. He apparently was over there in the London game, and he was brutally honest with him. And he said, hey, listen, dude, you're not running hard enough. You're not running between the tackles. You're trying to bounce everything for home runs. And he basically said, toughen the F up. And, you know, things have kind of changed from that point. This is an important matchup here. And this is where the Redskins have been extremely vulnerable defensively. It's against the run. They've allowed 49% of runs to great successful this season. That's 20th. They've allowed 13% of all running plays to great successful. That's 21st in the NFL. So not good there. And I think the kicker here is this below average run defense of Washington. They've actually faced the very easiest schedule of run offenses in the NFL. So the Titans should be able to get it going a little bit on the ground there. But again, it's just that mental struggle for me is I made it a touch higher than the current market. And it's not necessarily about laying double digits in the NFL, but it's about laying double digits with a total this low, right? The math just screams, hey, you got to take this. This is correlated dog to under. It's just, I'm not going to be one of those guys. And I think you'll see a scenario here where if Washington can't move the ball and sustain possession, eventually it's one of those games where even if it's tight, you'll see that Redskins defense kind of drain out towards the end of the game.
Hey, one quick question before we move on from this game to the main course on Saturday. What do you make of the Titans defense right now? They lose Logan Ryan, and some of the comments talked about how impactful he was, not only on the field but off the field. Kenny Vaccaro, I'm guessing, should be out there. I saw he was a participant in practice, but as far as the league's concerned, he's still in the concussion protocol.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is, again, a defense that I think is a little bit overrated, so you don't want to lose key cogs, especially defensive leaders. Now, is this the week that, you know, you're going to be exposed in the secondary with some of those injuries with Josh Johnson? Probably not, right? It'd be different if they were playing Kansas City or a team that could really pass it through the air. Some of those injuries in the secondary would probably be more impactful. Probably not as much this week.
Gotcha. Similar mindset here. So the Titans, double-digit favorites there as the Redskins have their playoff hopes. And a game very impactful for both the AFC and NFC playoff picture. This game will also go a long way, and it's the Chargers playing host to the Baltimore Ravens. They're 4-point favorites at betonline.ag. We've seen some under money come in on this game, paying total open 45. It's ticked down to 43.5. Tail the tape with these two teams. They're both amongst the best in the league in terms of yardage differential. Both teams top 7 in time of possession and average drive time. When we look at this Chargers team, only team in the league ranked top 10 in scoring offense, scoring defense, total defense allowing less than 18 points per game since week 5, second in the league. They happen to be matched up with a team number 1 in points per game allowed and number 1 in yards per game allowed. Which for you is the most fascinating matchup when you're handicapping Phillip Rivers against the Ravens defense or Lamar Jackson against the Chargers defense?
I think this game in general is just going to be wild to see unfold. And, you know, it's probably a little bit of both because I think they're correlated. You know, I think the Ravens' offensive performance will really help dictate what Baltimore does defensively. And it seems to be the case so far with Lamar Jackson starting. And I know we've talked a lot of Ravens football the last, I don't know, month plus. Us, our listeners, are basically on a free roll now at this point with our win total. We gave out over 8 before the season. So we just need 1 the final 2 weeks to go from a push to a win. So this is just like a team that I've really monitored closely. I've watched virtually every single snap, watched every single snap again last week against Tampa in the rain.
You, my friend, are a sick man who have watched every snap in that game last weekend.
Excuse me. I think I actually am getting sick. I was a little invested there. Bottom line, when you look at this team, they've changed dramatically. And we've gone into detail, I think, before anybody on this. And it's, you know, Lamar's faced five of the six worst defenses in the league in overall defensive efficiency. And those same five teams are all 26th or worst in defensive rush efficiency as well. So it's like you couldn't have handpicked better opponents for Lamar. Now, this Chargers defense, I think, is certainly going to present a tougher challenge. LA is above average in overall defensive efficiency, slightly below average against the run, but they've had three extra days to prep here as well. But specifically, one thing we talked about this Chargers defense last week was they're a little softer now up the middle without Corey Legit. Brandon Mebane's kind of dealing with some personal stuff. He hasn't been playing, and then you lose your thumper in the middle of the field and Denzel Perriman. I think that makes Derwin James a guy that's going to have a presence here. They're going to probably play him in the box a little bit more near the line of scrimmage than he has most of this season. So that'll be fun to watch. But I think, you know, running right at the Chargers is where Lamar and this offense can be somewhat successful. What I can tell you, though, for sure, is we have seen a little bit of dog money, and that correlates to the under, which seems to be, you know, the larger focus, I think, of bettors and groups, and for multiple reasons. Baltimore's offense has just kind of slowed to a screeching halt since Lamar Jackson took over. From weeks 1 through 10 with Flacco, this is going to surprise some people, Baltimore is operating at the second fastest pace in the NFL. The last five games with Lamar, Baltimore has trended downwards to the 22nd fastest team, and you kind of combine that pace with their new style of play and the clock constantly running with all of Lamar's running, and just, you know, the market hasn't caught up yet. And this is wild to me, Todd. The most run-heavy team in the NFL this season is the Seattle Seahawks. They run the ball about a hair over 52% of the time. Since Lamar Jackson took over quarterback, Baltimore has ran the ball 66.3% of the time. I mean, like, the clock is just running constantly. It's pretty nuts. And I think why this correlates to Baltimore's defense a little bit, to kind of tie these in with the first 2 points, the slower pace, the more running and the clock burning, that Baltimore defense isn't on the field very often. And when they are, they're energized. They can go balls to the wall. They're well rested. Over this five-game stretch, I'm looking right now, it includes that overtime game against Kansas City. There's been a total of roughly 309 minutes of actual game action. Baltimore's defense has only spent 127 minutes on the field during that stretch. So, how they're running offensively really, really correlates to what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball as well.
And to put some of that in perspective, I mean, you dig into it. The Ravens last week against the Bucs, Payne, held the ball for more than 22 minutes in the second half and rattled off 39 plays to just 17. We saw the Falcons a few weeks ago only run 13 plays. Baltimore had three drives of more than 7 minutes, including the game-clinching drive where the Ravens took it from their own 38 inside the Bucs 10. Payne, I kid you not, I had to do a double take. When I went through the box scores and I watched that game, probably not as closely as you, they had a 15-play drive that covered 38 yards that lasted over 7 minutes. I didn't know that was possible in 2018.
Oh, it's possible, baby, especially when you're on the under. Love those kind of drives.
When you look at Phillip Rivers, he should have Keenan Allen back. Mike Williams putting together a tremendous season, 10 touchdowns, most by any franchise receiver since 1996. Are there any concerns about how the Ravens will match up defensively against this balanced Chargers offense, who will also be buoyed by getting Melvin Gordon back in the mix?
You know, you just love what Phillip Rivers is doing right now. Like, the dude's on another planet.
Before you break it down this game, is he going to win the MVP given Drew Brees' struggles if Mahomes doesn't look dynamic on Sunday night? Does Rivers sneak in there and take home the hardware?
Man, I think it's a real race right now. I think it's a real three-way race. I still have Mahomes probably the favorite right now with Brees trailing. And you look at some of these situations where you think probably Brees is at an advantage with playing games at home, with being larger favorites than the other two teams. But maybe Mahomes is going to do enough to pull it out here. I think it'll depend who potentially wins that AFC West division. I think that could potentially change some things. But I've been on the Philip Rivers train. You go back, like we were talking when they were out in London, just the kind of season he was having, and no one was really talking about him. And certainly Anthony Lynn's made some adjustments. He's a better coach this year. They're doing better things offensively on first down, right? It's not just running the ball into the line of scrimmage, and that's really helped Philip Rivers. So Anthony Lynn has certainly taken strides as a coach, but this guy's just killing it right now. And when I looked at this game initially, I think Mike Williams and Keenan Allen are going to have to win their matchups, because I'm not sure the Chargers are really capable of attacking Baltimore consistently where they're vulnerable. And as good as C.J. Mosley is, Baltimore has trouble defending the tight end position, right? They've given up the eighth most receptions to tight ends this season. They allow almost 12 yards of reception to tight ends. I don't know if old man Gates can have a respectable enough game to really, really exploit that weakness. And I know Chargers fans probably got a half chub this week seeing Hunter Henry back at practice doing some work there on the side. He's got 21 days, apparently, this practice window, where he can either be activated or miss the rest of the season. So if you're a Chargers fan, you're going to want to monitor that situation, because you potentially have Hunter Henry back for the playoffs if they move him to the active roster in the next 21 days. The other thing that's interesting here is we don't know about Austin Eckler. Melvin Gordon is certainly going to play. They like to use backs out of the backfield catching passes, and Baltimore does an outstanding job defending running back passes. They've allowed 388 yards to backs all season. That's second best in the NFL. So if that element is also missing from the Chargers offense, you know, it's certainly going to be tough sledding.
Yeah, should be a great game Saturday night to watch. Obviously, a little bit more impactful in the playoff picture than what we saw last week between Cleveland and Denver. Into Sunday slate, Payne, where this game took on some added intrigue on the heels of the Eagles' outright upset of the Los Angeles Rams during Sunday Night Football last week. And we've seen some interesting line movement here as well. Philadelphia, a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game sits at 46. We did, of course, see the Texans opened as modest 1.5-point favorites. I know on the outside, people go, oh, it's a 4-point move. It's big. Hasn't gone through any key numbers. But I want to start with the line movement before we get into the game itself. Suffice to say that we've seen professional bettors taking at least initially a position on the Eagles?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, right? You look at the look ahead, and there really wasn't this drastic shift. There was, you know, I believe it opened Pick'em, but I think you have to remember that look ahead line was released before Carson Wentz was out. So the reopen here of +1.5 on Philly is interesting. Certainly some professional money. I don't know how high this gets. We're starting to see a little resistance at Philly -2. I just think the numbers guys, the math guys, if this got to 3, are going to certainly take it with Houston. I think we're probably in a good position right now. 2.5, probably the right number. I'm just looking at our power ratings. You know, I could certainly see and make a case for Houston at 3. A lot of guys I speak to would probably make Houston 1 in this spot. So numbers wise, interesting, but yes, you're spot on. Philly has taken some significant pro money this week so far.
When I look at the matchups here, and we can start with the much maligned Eagles defense that got a breath of fresh air in Avante Maddox. Jim Schwartz had some pretty strong comments about what he meant to their overall defensive effort last week in containing the Rams. But as far as the Texans are concerned offensively, I mean, this is an offensive line that appears to me to be regressing a little bit. Deshaun Watson sacked 6 times last week, ultimately costing the Texans about 55 lost yards on those plays. And when you look at the season-long numbers, I mean, Watson's been sacked more than any quarterback in the league 52 times. You look at their sack percentage on dropbacks, I mean, the bottom of the barrel there. Can the Eagles consistently bring pressure, especially if the Texans don't have Lamar Miller and Alfred Blue a little bit more plotting, that you don't have to worry about the explosive run play going against you?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the matchup that's going to decide the game, that Eagles defensive line against the Texans offensive line. If they can be as dominant and disruptive as they were last week against the Rams offensive line, and I believe the Rams offensive line gave up 15 pressures last week, I think Philly's got a chance to win this game. And it looks like the defensive front kind of reverted back to who we thought they were, or who we thought they could be at the beginning of the season. And I know the full season metrics don't look great, obviously, for that front seven. But it seems like, to me, they're kind of confident, right? That's the biggest thing I took away from that game. Suddenly, that team's banded back together. That win certainly gives Philly a chance now. It certainly gives them hope. Roughly 30% chance of making the playoffs now. They got behind the underdog role, and I know you sent me the article the other day that's been floating around. They've changed the dog masks for ski masks.
Yep.
They've been talking about slipping into the playoffs here. You mentioned the Texans' offensive line. It's been a weakness for a long time now. It's the weakness of the offense. It's the weakness of the entire team. Deshaun Watson's been pressured on over 44% of his dropbacks this season. That's the second most of any qualifying quarterback right now. Only Josh Allen has been pressured more. This is nothing new for Watson. He dealt with it last year as well. It's really impressive to see overall how good he's been despite having basically the pocket caved in routinely. And again, that is the key to this game. We know the Eagles secondary can be had. Certainly Rasul Douglas has been a significant upgrade, I think, over Sidney Jones. You mentioned Avante Maddox. He's helped for sure. But Philly's secondary is actually trending worse than their season long metrics, which are already bad. The last four games, Philly's allowed 50% of passes to great success. So that's 26th best overall during that stretch. And sure, right, you look, they've played the Rams. They played a hot Dallas offense, but you also have Eli in that sample and three quarters of Mark Sanchez. So certainly,
don't you talk poorly about the Sanchez.
Certainly, I think there's some concern there, right? Like physically, they probably don't have anyone to actually compete with Hopkins.
Just put three guys on him.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's probably the best way to go. And if you look at some of the Eagles' losses this season, you'll notice one thing. It's dual-threat quarterbacks. Mariota, Cam, Dak twice. So, you know, this game is going to be reliant on the Eagles' defensive line dominating here to help protect the secondary. I think that's huge. The one positive when you look at the road-home splits for the Eagles' defense, dramatically better at Lincoln Financial. The other thing you're going to want to do is keep an eye on Tim Jernigan and Jordan Hicks to see if they practice on Thursday or Friday. Both of those guys, or either one of them, returning would be a huge boost to the Eagles' defense, especially if it's Hicks. I think that would be a huge get back. So I know they were limited on Wednesday. Also important to note that Wednesday was a walkthrough for the Eagles. But today and tomorrow, certainly monitor those two defensive injuries for Philadelphia. Could be a huge boost if you get both back.
Other side of the ball, Nick Foles and the Eagles offense clearly looked a little bit more polished. Only the second time all season that they hang 30 points on an opponent last week against the Rams. We've seen how much better this offense looks when they can establish the ground game. And I want to attribute this quote, but I remiss. I heard it. I can't remember if it was on radio or TV. And somebody brought up an interesting point, Payne, and wanted to get your take on it. They said when they watch the Eagles that they allow Carson Wentz to do a lot more in the offense, whether it's improvisation or game prep leading up to it, that they trust their franchise quarterback. Whereas with Nick Foles, it looks like the coaching staff is doing their homework, coming up with game plans and really playing to his strengths because they know that he doesn't have the same ability to make some of the changes. Have you seen some of that, that it's the coaching staff putting Foles in a better position to win than what they've done for Wentz, at least for most of the season?
Well, one thing that's happened this week is if you heard Mike Groh, the Eagles offensive coordinator, he talked about simplifying things, not just for Foles. He claimed, along with Doug Peterson, that this was going to be a complete offensive adjustment. Didn't matter who was going to be the quarterback. They were going to make things simple. If you look at the All-22 last week, the first thing you'll notice for Philly was a lot less motion pre-snap. And they claim it's about going tempo. Getting, you know, Foles in form early with the short passing game, not forcing their O-line to kind of protect longer against Sue and Donald for these long, long periods. You would expect the same thing here going against the Texans defensive front with Watt, Clowney, Merciless, all those guys. And I think that's partly why this total's ticked up a little bit, right? Because of that added tempo specifically in this matchup.
When you look at the Eagles receivers, I mean, who should scare the Texans? I mean, is it a Zach Ertz-style game? We think Alshon Jeffrey can continue to build some of the rapport that we've seen from Nick Foles, not only last week, but throughout the playoffs as well?
Well, I think it's got to be the receivers, right? Because you look at this and the Eagles could have trouble running the football, right? I just, you know, not many teams are balanced against this Houston defense. They allow 3.2 yards per rush, only 41% of runs have graded successful. That's number one in the NFL. Josh Adams struggled last week. Maybe we see a little heavier dose of Smallwood. We know Sproles is the guy Philly likes to use catching the balls out of the backfield. He appears healthy now. So maybe it's not just the receivers, but maybe it's Sproles out of the backfield. That's one thing. The Texans have allowed 80 receptions and 5 touchdowns to running backs this season. So, you look at Houston's defense, they don't do very well against tight ends either. So maybe this is an Ertz game. Maybe this is a Goddard game. They've gone to a lot of 12 personnel playing both of them on the field at the same time. So that could be something interesting. Foles really loves to target Alshon Jeffrey. That's his guy here. I don't know if we're going to see much from Tate. It just doesn't feel like the right fit there. So you got your two tight ends. And 12 personnel that should be successful. Sproles catching out of the backfield. The one thing we've seen with Alshon Jeffrey is he seems to be a Nick Foles guy. The yards per target rise for Alshon when Foles is the man operating Philly's offense. It's incredible to kind of see that relationship. But this is certainly a tough test for Nick Foles because you would envision him not having the complementary ground game, and it's going to be a lot on his shoulders here.
We shall see what Nick Foles can do. Can he keep the magic going forward in Philadelphia, keep their playoff hopes on life support this weekend against the Houston Texans? From the early afternoon kickoff to the late afternoon at the Superdome, where it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, we'll see how they handle Prosperity, a 5.5-point underdog against the homebound New Orleans Saints. Total in this game, 53 at betonline.ag. The scenario simple for the Saints, Payne: win one of the next two games and you won't have to play outside in the elements from now until 2019 at this point. But over this three-game road trip, the Saints' offense kind of bogged down in the first half. They scored a grand total of 9 points, but you talked about it at the top of the show. Defense has trended up. When we look at the Saints, are there reasons to be concerned about the offense, or do we just think it's a minor blip for what we'll see going forward from Sean Payton and Drew Brees?
It's a great question, and you totally redeemed yourself for that 2019 stat. Isn't there like 9 days left in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
You feel like one of those trend guys trying to sell a pick or something.
Nah, I'm not quite going that route. I meant just that you get your home games, you're going to ensure home field advantage, you play a game in Atlanta. I should have said regular season 2019. I'll put the asterisk and the caveat on it, you asshole.
Over-under on cusses by you, by the way, set. Apparently, last show, and I didn't really pay attention to it all that much, like 4 cuss words from Todd. I got questions like, what's going on with Todd? He's cussing. I'm listening to this podcast at work.
So what
the hell's going on? I got to put a headset on now or turn it down. So right. I set it at 3.5. You're only at 1 right now.
Oh, I'm going to certainly. You could take the under to the bank today. You take the under to the bank.
No,
that may be the only time it slips out.
I have an ability to rile you up pretty good.
That's a good point. You definitely do.
Listen, back to the important stuff here. I think if you're Sean Payton or Drew Brees, you can't love how the offense is trending right now. And it's probably multiple things, right? And we've touched on this for a while. We broke it down on Monday. The Saints offense doesn't have a clear, like, number two receiving weapon at wide receiver or tight end. Like, there's a reason they were so desperate to sign a guy like Dez Bryant. And you think about that. Like, not even the Cleveland Browns were ultimately willing to sign Dez Bryant, right? Like, pretty wild there. Brandon Marshall, you sign him, he doesn't play single down. And so they're in need, and they know it, of a second receiving option. You can make fun of him all you want. He's been in the league a decade. He can do things other receivers cannot. But the Saints really miss Ted Ginn Jr., I think. And I know they had high hopes for Cameron.
Takes the lid off of defenses.
Yeah. They had really high hopes for Cameron Meredith. Hoped that he could have recovered in time with his knee injury. It was kind of this nagging thing at the beginning of the season. Wasn't fully healthy. They planned on him playing in the slot. That is a huge position in Sean Payton's offense. I think the other thing we've seen is the injuries on the offensive line. You had the stud left tackle, Teron Armstead. He's missed significant time with the pec injury. I know he's been practicing. I think their hope is to have him back for that stretch run. They want to make sure he's 100%. And then this week, the injuries you're going to want to monitor is that Saints all-world center, Max Unger, dealing with the concussion. Even Jermon Bushrod, he is missed practice this week as well. So, I mean, those are huge injuries, especially I think when you're looking at who they're playing this week, they kind of become magnified. So you're going to have to check on Max Unger, Jermon Bushrod, because this is a Pittsburgh defense, number two in adjusted sack rate. They blitz the hell out of you. So having that cohesion on the offensive line, I think, is key. And we've talked ad nauseum about getting pressure on Drew Brees. It doesn't happen often. He's only been pressured on 25% of his dropbacks, but you have a shot if you can get pressure. And shockingly, in spurts, I thought Carolina did that pretty well on Monday night. The other thing to note, and maybe why the Saints can get a little bit of healthy, now that they're back in the dome, I mean, they have one of the largest home-road offensive dichotomies in the NFL. Like, it is not close. It's the largest splits in all of the NFL. The Saints offense, they're successful 14% more on their passes at home. They average 2.8 yards more per pass attempt at home. Drew Brees' passer rating, 35 points higher at home. The explosive passing is up 4% at home. Like, you name it, the Saints offense is just a different beast at home. And I think going back to things what you said at the top, that's why it's vital, I think, for them to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, and when you look at it, the 12 points the Saints scored on Monday Night Football's win against the Carolina Panthers was the fewest by the Saints in a win since 1998. Drew Brees' passing statistics over his last four games, he hasn't thrown for more than 205 yards, a far cry from what we grew accustomed to early in the season. But Payne, you mentioned it and how well the defense has trended. They've allowed only a shade more than 12 points per game since week 10. It leads the league. They've held six straight opponents under 20 points, the longest such streak we've seen in the league this year. They're the number one rushing defense. And I bring all of that up to mention this, that when I look at the Steelers, I mean, this is a team that's so reliant on actually finding balanced offense. I mean, they're 6-0-1 this season when running for 100+. Do you trust Big Ben, should the Steelers be contained running the football, to win a game entirely with his arm, given the performances we saw on the road at Jacksonville, on the road at Denver, and some of the other opponents where Pittsburgh has struggled away from Heinz Field?
Yeah, they have struggled away from home for sure. And like, I can't envision the Steelers being able to run the ball a ton here. And I know they took advantage of the New England defense last week that's really struggled to stop the run recently. Like, I was shocked. I thought it was kind of an anomaly performance seeing Brandon Bolden and the Miami Dolphins just go apeshit against that New England defense. But it happened again last week. Like, hat tip to the Steelers offensive line. We know how great they are in pass protection. But last week, Jalen Samuels had like gaping holes to run through. And he's not like the best running back, but he averaged 7.5 a carry, had 6 explosive runs, 74% of his 19 runs graded successful. But I think when you look at the Saints' run defense, they should be able to make Pittsburgh's offense one-dimensional. And if that's the case, I think it's going to be fun to see Antonio Brown and Juju go up against that New Orleans Saints secondary that is much improved. We don't have to go too far into it. We outlined it Monday night a couple days ago. But there's just massive improvement in that Saints secondary, and the market just hasn't caught up yet. And it came to fruition again Monday night. And listen, weeks 1 through 8, the Saints allowed 53% of passes to grade successful. They gave up 8.7 yards per pass attempt. Weeks 9 through 15, just 45% of passes graded successful, and the yards per pass attempt dipped to 7.6 an attempt. So it's trending right now as the 9th best pass defense in the league. Sean Payton has smartened up, smart coach. You got to let your players do what they do best, and that's the one change he's made. Eli Apple is much better at the line of scrimmage and press coverage than he is like playing off man or like in a zone guarding space. They've put him on the line of scrimmage, and that's helped big time. It's really the reason why this Saints secondary has really, really improved. I'm also intrigued here to see what we get from Pittsburgh. I know this is like this important game to making the playoffs. You don't want to piss away like all your hard work from last week, but man, that was like a get over the hump game for Pittsburgh. They slayed the dragon, and it'll be interesting to see if that kind of acts as like this confident boost where they run through this brick wall, or does it become this spot where it's like a deep breath of like, you know, just like a sigh of relief here. Like we got over the hump. So that's what's going to be interesting for me to see. The number is perfect. We made it 5.9, so there's like no value in the actual number. You need to find like these other elements to kind of get you over the hump to make this game a play. I don't see that at this point right now. Wouldn't be shocked to see this total continue to drop a little bit.
One last question in this game. How much does the dynamic of the handicap for the Steelers change should the Ravens win outright on Saturday against the Chargers?
Yeah, that would be interesting to see. Certainly, that game will impact this one, right? Like, you know, your ass to the fire. You either got to win it or you have a little bit of room here to navigate. But either way, like I said, like, this shouldn't be. I know you slayed the dragon last week, but if you're Mike Tomlin, like, you got to rally the troops. Like, you can't give away everything that you did last week. And this has got to be an all-in effort here again. Certainly more to play for Pittsburgh in my mind. But the number is perfect. And the one thing that concerns me just a little bit, if I were backing Pittsburgh here, is I know they've won these games, New Orleans, but it feels like their stock's a little low, if that could be humanly possible. There's been all this talk, and now it's not just us saying it, right? We're always, that's one thing you like always want to monitor. We're always kind of a couple weeks ahead of the national narrative, but now people are talking about this Saints offense being an issue and not being very good. I don't watch a lot of national TV. I don't listen to a lot of national radio, but like, you get in your car, or you just flip on and it seems to be what everyone's talking about the last few weeks. And so now they're getting back at home where they operate the best, and the national media is talking about how this offense has issues. It feels like you're maybe buying the stock a little bit low on New Orleans, especially at 5.5, because six is an important number. It really is. It's a secondary key number. It's a number that's really trended upwards in terms of importance once they move that extra point back. So it'll be interesting to see where we go. I think six is the perfect number.
Would definitely echo those sentiments. I think a lot of people are down on Saints stock, ready to hit the panic button given how the offense has performed or not performed over the last 3 weeks. But oh, how different a home game can make this group look. We do have one other game to get to, Payne. That, of course, the Sunday nighter between the Chiefs and Seahawks. But some business to attend to before we get there. He joins us every Thursday right here on the Bet the Board podcast. You, of course, can follow Dave Mason on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, when I look at a week like week 15 unfold and we see a lot of the underdogs not only cover but winning outright, I have to imagine it was one of the banner weeks for the house.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very good week. You know, action does go down a little bit this time of year, so there were other weeks earlier in the season that were a lot better just because there's so much more action, you know, in those earlier months. But still, very good week for the house. Players, their big games were Texans, Titans, Skins, and for the house, 49ers, huge, Steelers, and Chargers. But, yep, no complaints.
Hey, quick question, Dave. When you look at a game like Sunday night, and it's your beloved Eagles, so I'm sure it helps not only the house, but your rooting interest as well, as their playoff hopes are still on life support. I mean, how big is that when you have a two touchdown favorite that loses outright, or do you find the players kind of shy away from it because when you're teasing it or money line parlay, it doesn't do a whole lot for their bets?
Yeah, that wasn't that much of a need. The action was at pretty 50-50, so you know, it was, you know, sure, won some teasers. You had some Philly money line parlay or money line bets, you know, the big payout. So overall, really wasn't, the action was great, but overall wasn't a big winner or a big loser for the house.
And Dave, when we transition to week 16, talking about that action, how does it look so far? Anything ratcheting up with huge liabilities at this point, and maybe any early sharp action that's coming?
Yeah, there's always huge liabilities. so far, the biggest ones are Redskins, 70% on the Redskins, 65% on the Chargers, 68% on the Cowboys, 78% on the Falcons, 76% on the Vikings, Packers getting 69%. The biggest one on Sunday is going to be the Bears with 79%, and just a lot of overall action. Not only is that 79%, but that's getting the most early action for Sunday's games, and the Chiefs at 66%. As far as sharps are concerned, a few sharp plays, not too much as of yet. Dallas over 46.5, that's up to 48. Texans over 45, that's up to 46. Browns was sharp at -7.5, that's up to -9.5.
Always interesting to hear how some of those liabilities come in, especially with the road favorites in those particular spots and some of the standalone contests. Dave, for a lot of our players that may or may not already be with you, they may want to reload for all the big bowl games that are coming up. I know you're going to have Christmas NBA up as early as anybody, the NFL playoffs, all sorts of props. What kind of opportunities are available, whether it's from a reload or a new customer standpoint, especially if they're branded Bet the Board with us?
Yes, sir. If you do not have a BetOnline.ag account, sign up for one and use promo code 75 BTB for a one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
You can hear him here every single Thursday until they hand out the Lombardi Trophy in early February, breaking things down from behind the counter. Follow Dave Mason on Twitter, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, happy and healthy holidays to you. Hopefully you get a few hours off here or there to take in some of the holiday festivities, but otherwise we'll catch up with you same time next week.
Awesome. Talk next week. Happy holidays.
Go figure, Payne. Dave finds himself in the spot along with his compatriots at betonline.ag, rooting for the San Francisco 49ers as a home underdog. Oh, what a difference a few weeks makes. We were taking six with them against the Denver Broncos. We took six early in the week last week and shared with our listeners the 4.5 against Seattle. Now, all of a sudden, I don't want to say the market's overcorrected, but that number down to 4 as they play host the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the kind of effort we get from both those teams. And I think that effort is somewhat in question. It's why we've seen this total tick down a little bit. Are the Chicago Bears still partying their ass off? San Francisco finally got over the hump, beating Seattle. Back-to-back, all-in games. You heard Richard Sherman deliver the speech after the game last week, and you could just tell it meant more. They were all in on that game. They were super focused. The number, I think we will still see, and we've seen a little bit of a nibble. The math guys continue to like San Francisco, and for the reasons we outlined last week, just their numbers with Nick Mullins are really being vastly underrated. But the spot this week, and then you mentioned just the market at this point, when you can take six at home against Denver, are you running to take 3.5, 4 against Chicago? You know? I'm on the sidelines there. Not that that's a game that we're intended on breaking down, but that's kind of where I'm at right now with it.
We always like peeling back the curtain and getting a quick, 90-second vignette from you on games that we weren't going to do deep dives into. But we do have one game left to get to. As we said, the Chiefs and the Seahawks. It's Kansas City, a 2.5-point road favorite, headed up to take on the Seahawks. Total in this game, paying 53.5 at betonline.ag. And I want to start with Russell Wilson and some of the numbers the Seahawks team has put up in prime time since 2012. 16-2 straight up, 14-3-1 against the spread. Russell Wilson, 35 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. Those numbers are fine and dandy, but Seattle dealing with some major injury concerns that could impact this football game.
I think this that stat that you threw out there really plays into what I said, I don't know, a few weeks ago. It's like if you lined up a bunch of talent evaluators, a bunch of GMs, and said, hey, pick your franchise quarterback, name the top five guys you would use. Russell Wilson, probably not one of the top five guys. But if you said, hey, we're down 4, last drive of the game, I need you to maneuver and make something happen, I would think Russell Wilson's probably one of the five guys that you would pick. And so I think that court just makes clutch plays. He's got that ability. He's cool as a cucumber. So that is an interesting stat. You mentioned a bunch of injuries. Both teams have them. I don't know where we want to start. Certainly the Chiefs, a little bit loaded with injuries. Couple guys on the offensive line. Watkins still hasn't practiced yet. The extra time should help Tyreek Hill a little bit. He's certainly going to play. Bradley McDougal is certainly an injury you're going to want to monitor. We can probably start there with the Seahawks defense. I think that's one that's very vital here when you're looking at this matchup and kind of looking at where Seattle trends defensively, specifically in the secondary. Since week 8, dead last in passing success rate defense, second worst over that time frame in explosive pass defense. So when you get Kansas City rolling into town, Andy Reid with extra time to prep, that's scary, especially if Bradley McDougal, probably one of your best guys in the secondary, is dealing with an injury. It sounds like when they asked Pete, he gave the one-word response on if he'll play. He said, possibly. What I have kind of... I don't really know how to say this. What I'm hearing is, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, for the injuries that are more than just kind of day-to-day for Seattle, they ship players out to an undisclosed location. And so McDougal has been sent there to deal with this knee tendonitis, whatever they're calling it. And they said maybe he'll be back at practice on Friday. I think you, if he's back at practice on Friday, maybe he's got a shot. If he's not there on Friday, you're going to know before. I think that's probably a good indication that he wouldn't play if he's not there on Friday. So monitor that situation. But I know he's been one of the players that was kind of shipped off to this undisclosed location. I kind of hate to be repetitive about this, but it just seems like the last few weeks, all the key games involved the same teams. But I think it's worth mentioning again, the Chiefs offensively have trended a bit downwards. It's not like this massive shift, but certainly a downward trend, whether it's more film on Reed and Mahomes, the combination of Hunt and Watkins being out and Tyreek Hill operating at much less than 100%. I think all of those things are kind of at play here. What's really been missing from the Chiefs offense without Hunt and Watkins is the explosiveness. That's the biggest thing that I've seen. Over this three-game stretch, without those two, Kansas City's passing offense went from the most explosive in the NFL to the 17th. They went from the 9th most explosive run offense to the 25th. And certainly, you know, people who are Chiefs fans will be like, well, Baltimore's defense is in that sample. True. But you also had the Raiders in there too. So it's been something we've been monitoring. And when you have a defense as poor as Kansas City, the reason they're dropping a few games, the reason they haven't been covering spreads lately is because this offense is trending down and we know how poor the defense actually is.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk about that. Kansas City 0-4-1 against the spread all the time. It's about market efficiency and staying ahead. Every now and again, we'll fade a team a little bit too early, but oftentimes things end up regressing to the mean and exactly where they need to be. You talked about Kansas City and some of their struggles offensively, their defensive struggles well chronicled, Payne, when we go through it. I mean, they're dead last in rush defense efficiency. They're allowing 410 yards per game, good enough for 31st in the league. They're last in passing defense. Now, the one bright spot is they can bring pressure. Chris Jones, first player to record a sack in 10 straight games since the stat was tracked, yet not good enough to be named to the Pro Bowl team as anything better than an alternate. Do you trust the Seahawks' offensive line and passing downs to slow down not only Jones, but also Dee Ford, Justin Houston, Allen Bailey? I mean, the Chiefs can bring pressure from all different angles. Thankfully for the Seahawks, though, they run the ball as efficiently, or I should say as often as almost any team in the league.
Right, they do. And this is obviously a tough matchup for the Chiefs. It's probably as tough as it gets, especially on the defense. And again, you mentioned it. It's not to sound overly repetitive, but the Chiefs just can't stop the run. Like, it just dead last in basically every run category. 59% of runs, great, successful. Now, they do an okay job of limiting the explosive runs. But this is where Seattle makes their hay. They are the most run-heavy team in the NFL. They're committed to it. They're committed to it the day they brought in a new offensive coordinator, which, you know, most of us didn't love. But it seems to have worked. They want to bully you around in the trenches. This is the exact style I think you want to employ when you're playing Kansas City. Keep Mahomes on the sidelines. That's the thing. I think it can work. With this specific matchup, I think first down is going to be vital. That's one thing when you're watching this game. See what happens on first down. Who wins first down? If the Chiefs can somehow win that down, and kind of force Seattle to, you know, pass on second and long or third and long, they have a chance, right? That's when the Kansas City defense improves. Kansas City's sixth in adjusted sack rate. They're number one in explosive pass defense. Their strength is their passing defense. And Seattle's offensive line, they are significantly better run blockers than they are pass protectors. So I think that's the thing to watch for. If Kansas City can somehow win first down and force Seattle to pass a little bit more, their defense improves dramatically. Expect a larger dose of Eric Berry. Played in the first half. He was on a limited pitch count. He was a full participant in practice on Wednesday for the first time all season. I think that points to him possibly playing the entire game. Kendall Fuller, who we talked about on Monday with Dr. Chow, he's been playing with a broken wrist. He had the cast on Thursday. Signs point to him playing here. One thing that we have seen, though, obviously, is you look at the road home splits for this Chiefs defense, and they are significantly better at home. They are a nightmare on the road, give up over 33 points a game on the road this season. So that'll be the interesting thing to watch out for here. The number is interesting to me. The look ahead on this was Seattle minus one. And initially, after Kansas City lost, I said, man, are we going to get one of those book numbers, Todd? I thought maybe we might see, you know, Seattle minus 2.5 juiced, or hell, even minus 3. But then they stubbed their toe at San Francisco, and we get the reopen of 2.5 here. I think Seattle is eventually going to be the side. I don't know if I'm going to be in that, but certainly when you're looking at this game at the 2.5 mark, potentially a teaser leg on Seattle.
I have to ask this question, although I'm about 98% sure I already know the answer, because I'm sure there'll be some listeners out there that are waiting, trying to figure out how this game will go. Any chance that you think that we'll see a 3 pop and folks will be able to grab the home underdog plus 3 minus a quarter or somewhere in that vicinity?
I mean, you could do that right now at some shops, right?
True. And you did hear
Dave. So it's more of Dave will it get there naturally? That,
yep.
I don't know. I don't think so. I could be wrong, though. I don't think. I'm certainly sure there's going to be an appetite for the dog here at 3. So maybe at some of the square shops who don't cater to the pros at all, maybe you get a rogue 3 there. If you're talking about, you know, one of the sharper shops in the world, probably not. Probably not. I wouldn't think. What do those bet splits look like?
I mean, we just talked to Dave, and Dave said, what, about 65-35, I believe. I haven't checked some of the other precincts to see how they were weighing in, but I'd have to imagine this game is going to be 60-40, 65-35 as you approach Sunday kick.
Actually closer than it looks. I see 55-45 in favor of the Chiefs. So, man,
it's a little bit surprising.
If that's the case, the only way this would get to 3 is if that ends up being the side from a couple groups.
That's a good point. I mean, with that being the scenario, if a game got to 3, it might not be a good sign that you want to try and ultimately move on the Seahawks with some of the myriad of injuries you discussed. But should be a great game, electric atmosphere in prime time for Sunday Night Football, the penultimate game in that particular time slot. So we've covered 5 of the biggest games. No, we're not going to delve into the Christmas Eve fiasco between Denver and Oakland. We'll allow all our loyal listeners to handicap that on their own and bet recklessly while they're drunk with eggnog, along with college basketball tournaments or some holiday hoops that I know are a Christmas tradition. But we do have one final order of business, Payne, and it's figuring out where we're going to go to keep this modest win streak intact during NFL Week 16.
It's not going to be San Francisco again for the 3rd week in a row.
I mean, I think there were a lot of people out there going, you know what? We really like the 49ers. Hopefully they go back to that well.
Let's go to the Saturday night game. Let's go to the Baltimore Chargers game. I don't want to go too far into this. We broke it down at the top of the show ad nauseum. Rewind it back if you need to hear our thoughts on this. But it's simply based upon Baltimore's pace of play, the way Baltimore's running the ball right now, the clock constantly burning, Baltimore's defense being re-energized, obviously not spending a ton of time on the field. So when they are out there, it's balls to the wall. I like the first half under here. It's kind of the bet the board tradition. 21.5 or better is the buy price that is widely available as we talk about it right now, even some 22.5 out there. But 21.5 or better, Baltimore Chargers first half under.
I like it. We're going to root for punts Saturday night. We're going to see long, time-consuming drives end in field goals for both these teams. Going to the break somewhere around 6-3, and that's only because Justin Tucker hits a 65-yarder as time expires in the first half. I like it.
It'll be interesting to see. We saw a slight uptick this morning on the full game over from like 43.5 out to 44 once Schefter fully announced that Keenan Allen was going to play. I don't think that was a surprise to anybody, right? Once you get in that limited practice on Wednesday, it's a pretty good sign you're going to be good to go. But it is funny to see how Schefter's tweets kind of the impact they have on the market.
It's also, speaking of tweets and everything else, you see Odell Beckham Jr. officially downgraded to doubtful for the Giants contest against the Colts. I don't think any of us expected him to play. Always funny to see books kind of scramble a little bit, pull that number off the board, and make subtle adjustments to the point spread accordingly. Special thanks to Dave Mason, who joins us every Thursday throughout the course of NFL season. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow Payne on Twitter as well at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there. One last order of business, Payne, before we close up shop before the holiday. You know, walk us through what a Payne family Christmas may or may not be like.
It's nothing crazy. It really isn't. It's
you guys aren't elaborate, like
a lot of drinks.
Not like elaborate gift givers or anything like that. No cars like the Lexus commercials or anything over the top and extravagant.
No. For me, it's about just relaxing, getting away a little bit, maybe have a drink, maybe take a nap, watch some sports. That's about it. It's not not anything extravagant as you're kind of outlining there. No cars. Although a new car has made it into the family. Recently, which is, I'm not a BMW guy, but the 850i, that doesn't drive like a BMW. Very nice car. So yeah, other than that, nothing crazy. It's not as wild as you would envision.
All right, well, good chance for a little bit of R&R. I know you'll be glued to your beloved.
Test drive that car. I know you're kind of in the market for a new one. It's not your normal BMW that has like the most uncomfortable seats ever, and your forearms get a workout when you just make a turn left. Like they actually made some improvements. It's a normal car.
My brother-in-law is actually trying to offload his BMW to me. It's not exactly a family-friendly car, as him and my sister are expecting.
I hate him.
So he's trying to go, you know what, Ed, this is the kind of car you need. And I said, well, you know, we'll think about it and try and figure it out. But either
the
way.
The brother-in-law, the Florida State guy.
Yep, the Florida State guy. As if I'm not surrounded by you enough talking Seminoles football and everything else, I got to deal with him, who's also a Steelers fan on top of it.
I would have paid great money to see the interaction on Thanksgiving when the A&M game went to, like, how many overtimes? Six overtimes?
I think it was seven.
Was it seven?
And
there you go.
And you mean I'm rooting for A&M to try and cash a 2.5-point favorite, and all he's doing is rooting for Jimbo Fisher to crash and burn?
Jimbo Fisher is not going to crash and burn, especially early on, right? He's a guy that gives you about 4 or 5 solid years just kicking everyone in the dick when it comes to recruiting. That
would they,
Texas A&M recruiting class.
Yeah, what do you finish? I mean, third, right? Behind only Alabama and Georgia, I believe.
It's fantastic. He is, when he's engaged, a fantastic recruiter. And Jimbo has some wild requests. And I think he's got rich enough guys there over at A&M to basically just kind of point and move with his finger, and he's going to get everything he wants. So that might keep him engaged for the long haul, for sure.
Line them coffers, National Signing Day. I'm not getting into that. That's a little bit too much nerddom for even me. happy holidays to all of you, our loyal listeners. As we say all the time, we appreciate everything you guys have meant to the Bet the Board brand throughout the years. Go to iTunes, 5-star review, show us your love. Buy the dwindling inventory as we had a second shipment of some shirts. Perfect thing to don if you're off between the Christmas and New Year's holiday. We'll be back with you next Thursday talking about a few NFL Week 17 games, but with a much more intense focus on the big bowl games coming up, including the national semifinals, the game between Alabama, Oklahoma, Clemson, and Notre Dame. Be safe, be smart out there, and most importantly, be ready to cash a ticket on the first half under between the Ravens and Chargers Saturday night. We'll see you at the window.